Thank you for choosing Weekly Politics as your podcast today. So today, I've done a lot of research on the candidates who are running for president, and there's quite a few of them. There's more Republicans than Democrats, obviously. There's only Marianne Williamson and RFK who are challenging Joe Biden right now, and that's quite interesting. What I've been finding is with most of these candidates, a lot of them believe the same thing, and a lot of them are just kind of like pass-by candidates. RFK is the only candidate that's worth paying attention to on the Democrat side because he's not Joe Biden at all. He's like the Democrat version of Ron DeSantis, obviously, but a Democrat. And Marianne Williamson is just a pass-by candidate. She's not going to win anything, she's not going to get anywhere. But yeah. On the Republican side, there's other interesting things going on. So there's Donald Trump, there's Ron DeSantis, and this, I'm sure a lot of you guys have now heard of him, Vivek Ramaswamy, who's quite interesting. When I first heard about him, I kind of just shrugged him off because he had some of the lowest poll ratings on planet Earth, but recently he's been going up in the polls. I will actually, just so I don't get anything wrong while I'm doing this here, I'm gonna pull up the latest polls. So, I believe the last time the polls are taken, he was at like 2%, maybe. And that it's changed. When I checked the last time, it was at like 7%, I believe. So what's really interesting is when you have essentially this many candidates on the Republican side, what you start to see is a lot of, I don't want to call it loyalty problems, but it is a lot of loyalty. You start to see what's going on, really what's going on. And so let me just read off the top, let's see, top five candidates, just because it's really interesting. So the top five candidates are Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, Mike Pence, Nikki Haley. Those are the top five candidates for their Republican nomination right now. And this is what I mean when I said loyalty. So Ron DeSantis has been about 18-20% ever since he announced he's running for president. He's never changed. He's not gone up, he's not gone down. He's always been around there. Trump has always been around 50% for the Republican nomination ever since he announced. Oh, it's just he's not gone up, he's not gone down. On the other hand, Vivek Ramaswamy, he was at like 2% and now he's at 6.8%. Mike Pence, he was at 15%, now he's at 6.3%. Nikki Haley, she's still at 3.6. But yeah, she hasn't changed really at all. So what's really interesting about this is DeSantis and Trump haven't changed whatsoever. Ramaswamy and Pence have changed enormously. So when Ramaswamy, however you want to say his name, when he went from 2% to 7%, he didn't take votes from Trump or DeSantis. He took votes from Pence, because Pence dropped from 15 to 6%. That's a very large and statistically important number. It's not something you just pass by. So I'm still looking at the polls right now. By the way, polls are not definitive of just about anything. When you have these polls, what you have is essentially an idea, right? So the polls are like, what would happen if these people were running and every single person in the country had to vote on these people? But when it comes to a nomination, that's not how that works. For example, in Iowa, one of the most contested areas in the country, to get the Republican nomination in Iowa is huge. It doesn't mean you're going to win the nomination, but it's a good kickstart, I'll say that much. To get the nomination in Iowa, it's extremely hard. And to get the nomination other places, it's relatively easier. But technically, if you have 20% of Republican support and your chief adversary has 50% of Republican support, you could still win the nomination despite having 30% less support than your adversary has. I'm just gonna say it. So these polls are technically don't mean anything, but they're interesting to look at to see where the country is necessarily at in terms of how they think, generally speaking, of these specific people. So if I see, for example, the first poll I'm looking at, this is on 538. They have a huge list of polls, and that's why I like 538. Morning Consult, they have a poll on 538 that has Trump at 59% and DeSantis at 16%. That's an interesting poll. I don't think that's exactly where it's at. I think it's more 50-20%, but it's fine, whatever. Every poll is going to say something different. Even if that were true, DeSantis could still win. And that poll right there, that's just if the election happened right here, right now, today, and every single person in the country voted at the same time, it's going to look a little bit like that. But that's nothing how this works. Iowa, we vote first. We vote in January. And then another state will vote later in January, or I think it's February actually, and another state in February, and then some March, and then some in April or May. You get the point. You don't all vote at the same time. Everyone votes, every single state has a different time that we vote for our name nomination. And so technically these polls technically mean nothing in terms of who's going to win the nomination. They mean everything in terms of how well we think of these people. For example, Vivek Ramaswamy, he surged ahead in the polls. He is now polling higher than Mike Pence, which is good. 7% versus 6%, that's fine, whatever. That doesn't mean people like him more than Mike Pence. What that does mean is that when I think it was last week, Friday or something, when the summit happened, which was the first technical event of the Republican Party, people liked Vivek's speeches and liked what he had to say more so than they liked Mike Pence's speeches and what Mike Pence had to say. So they were more impressed with Ramaswamy than they were of Mike Pence. That doesn't mean they like him more than Mike Pence. They were disappointed with Pence from that one event. They were encouraged by Ramaswamy from that one event. So essentially, it's just how they felt in that exact moment. That's what these polls are representative of. It means nothing in terms of how they're going to vote when the nomination comes, and it means nothing on who's going to win the nomination. Same thing with the Democratic Party. These work the same way. The most interesting poll I like to see here is with there's one here that has DeSantis versus Ramaswamy, and that's 29% versus 19%, which I found very interesting. Basically, they just took Trump off the ticket and wanted to see who would win if Trump was not running. And it's still DeSantis in the lead by quite a bit, and then it's Ramaswamy by quite a bit. And then it goes down to Pence at 13% and Scott at 5%. So it goes down pretty quickly after that. But it's quite interesting poll. I like looking at that. That's the essentials of the Republican nomination so far. I like looking at this race. It's really interesting. There was that one point where DeSantis was ahead of Trump, and that was before either of them even announced they were running for president, which is quite interesting. But it's working progress. So what I find interesting is Vivek Ramaswamy is a really good candidate. If Vivek were to win the nomination and become president, I would not complain. Like, he's actually really good. I still like DeSantis more than Vivek. I think DeSantis has a better background. DeSantis knows what he's doing better than Vivek because he's run Florida and he's showed us how he runs Florida and we like how he runs Florida. I personally really I look at Florida's legislature and the laws that they're passing as an example. I understand there's laws that go into, what are they called? I just forgot the word. What's it? A committee. They go into a committee, and these bills get voted on within the committee, and those bills are not necessarily good things. So let me explain what I'm talking about right here. Every single state, there are 50 states, every single one of us has bad people in the legislature. There is no exception. Florida has some terrible Republicans in the legislature and some terrible Democrats in the legislature there. California has some terrible Republicans and terrible Democrats in the legislature. There's a couple in every single state, at the very least, a couple. My point I'm trying to make is that whenever you look at Twitter or any website in general that's news website, you always find something that's going to try to push their agenda on you. So let's say you're looking at CNN. Let me just pull up CNN to make a point. Let me find a good example of a political news here. Okay. They don't have very many political stuff out today, so I don't know if I'll be able to comment on anything. I'll look at CNBC. CNN doesn't have anything out today yet. CNBC. I do not want to see the stock market. I want to see your politics, please. Well, something I didn't know actually. DeSantis got in a car accident. I didn't know that. He's unhurt, so it's totally fine. That's good. Okay. So here's a title for an article, real quick. Israel Parliament starts vote on limiting Supreme Court power. That's in Israel. It's a really big thing, actually. They're having massive protests in Israel. It's crazy. I said the word crazy. Sorry, if you know, you know. Okay, so what's going on? Yeah, CNBC doesn't have anything that I can use as an example right now. But essentially, what I'm trying to say is when there's Twitter, especially, is terrible at this, or the Daily Beast. Let me look up the. I know they are terrible at this too. The Daily Beast. And politics, please. Okay. Where's a good one? Okay, the Daily Beast. DeSantis staff keep sharing this page that make Nazi memes. What is the idea of that title? The idea of that title is to catch 90% of people who are on the left side of the equation's attention, right? That's the idea of a title. You have to capture someone's attention, so you click on it. So I'm going to click on it. Members of Ron DeSantis' presidential campaign keep sharing videos from a DeSantis fan account that adds Nazi imagery to clips of the Florida governor. So what they're trying to say here is basically, DeSantis is a Nazi and he's trying to point himself out as a Nazi because he's a terrible person and he knows it and he's trying to be a fascist. That's the entire point of this article. What they won't tell you is that that campaign video is actually for the sake of making fun of the people that call him a fascist. Every single person who I know who supports Ron DeSantis, including myself, if I were to ask them about this, would be like, yeah, I know people call him a fascist. And he's not a fascist. I think it's funny. Everything he does in Florida is for the sake of freedom, not fascism. So when he does a campaign video pointing out or adding fascist memes on the campaign video, that's not to point himself out as a fascist. That's to make fun of the people pointing him out as a fascist. Basically, there's two sides of the equation, the right side and the wrong side. And quite often, news stories, including Fox and the Daily Beast, will point out the wrong side, and it's really annoying. So, if you see something like a bill, like let's say in Iowa, this bill is introduced that says you can't high-five people for 5 seconds after eating bacon or something stupid like that, then essentially you don't care about it because it's not going to pass. The stupidest of all bills proposed by the stupidest of all people will never pass. They propose it into a subcommittee, most of the time into a subcommittee. The subcommittee might pass it because the subcommittee has three legislator people in there. Three, maybe four or five at max. Very few, and most of them are like-minded. And it doesn't matter if it passes a subcommittee because the subcommittee has no power. It just says, if it passes a subcommittee, it just says, yeah, we three people like it. That's all it says. And then it goes to a committee. Now, a committee votes on it. And I'm using the example of the House of Representatives right now. So when the committee votes on it, then it's something to pay more attention on. If the committee passes it, now you have something you can talk about. Because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of bills and laws every single year that don't make it past committee. You should not be looking at these things or like be worrying. Sorry, you can look at them, but you shouldn't worry about these committees or these laws that haven't even gotten through committee yet. And when they do get through committee, yes, if it is in your state, I would worry about it. If it's not in your state, I would just get mad about it because you don't live in that state, so you don't have to worry about it, but getting mad about it would matter. But you get the point. Even then, I'm just going to point out how hard it is to actually pass a law. The Speaker of the House has to say, yes, we should vote on this, or no, that's stupid, we shouldn't vote on this. If he says, no, we're not going to vote on this, the bill dies. Done. You never have to worry about it again. If he says, yes, we should vote on this, which most of the time they do, then what's going to happen is it's going to go into the House floor, and Iowa's example, the Republicans, well, everyone's going to vote on it, but we have a two-thirds majority of Republicans, so if it's Republican supported, it's most likely going to pass. The Republicans would vote on it. And if it passes the House and now goes into a committee, or maybe even a subcommittee, depending, in the Senate, and then if it passes the subcommittee, it goes to the committee. And if it passes the committee, it goes to the Senate floor. And then if it passes the Senate floor, it goes to the governor. And when it goes to the governor has 14 days to respond. If she doesn't sign the bill in 14 days, it becomes law. If she does sign the bill before 14 days, it becomes law. If she vetoes it, it goes all the way back to the beginning of the process again. So it's extremely hard to make a bill on a law. I understand people try to make it seem like it's really easy and that if something passes committee, therefore it's a law. It's not. It's a piece of paper at that point. It's nothing. It's just a statement. But it's interesting, you know? It's interesting the way people think these days. I'm, you know, I want to look up the Daily Beast again. I want to make fun of some of their articles. I don't know why, I just want to. It's gonna be funny. Barbie seems to have destroyed Ben Shapiro. I disagree, but okay. Okay. Vivek Ramaswamy can thank affirmative action for his success. Okay, we're gonna click on this one. Oh man. 37-year-old Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy has made a strident opposition to affirmative action a main part of his campaign pitch. His other majority policy pillar is fighting wokeness. Since announcing his presidential run in February, Ramaswamy has railed against what he refers to as preferences, race, gender, legacy status, etc., in college admissions and in hiring, saying entrance into both areas should be based on pure merit, which I agree, it should be based on pure merit. He has called race-based admissions a cancer on our national soil. I agree. Promised that as president, he would end race-conscious college admissions on day one without apology. Okay, good. And identified the defeat of affirmative action as the tip of the spear of my policy agenda. That's cool. Ramaswamy cheered the Supreme Court's decision to end race-conscious admissions at Harvard, his undergraduate alma mater, I don't know how you say that, despite the school noting that no students are admitted on the basis of race alone. Right. They're not admitted on the basis of race alone, but if you're black, you get more money from the federal government than if you're white. That's called affirmative action. And if you're black, you're more likely to get admitted than if you're white. That's called affirmative action. So, yes, it's not based on race alone, but race has a major play in it, which is still racism. You don't need to be Confederate style racist to be a racist. But as he made his way through two Ivy League universities, Ramaswamy himself benefited from a generous fellowship intended to provide opportunity and equity to groups who have historically often faced systemic barriers to success. First of all, Ramaswamy's from India. He moved to the United States, or his parents moved to the United States. He was born in Ohio, but both of his parents are from India, so he's Indian, essentially. American, but Indian. I'm having a very hard time understanding how that is. Cons I don't. There's. Okay. There's not a single story I've ever heard of in my entire life where an Indian American is disadvantaged. When you move to a new country, yes, your financial, what do you want to call it? Status is a lot less because you're moved to a new country. New society, you have to learn the culture, you have to get a new job, you have to settle down, find a house, find a good community, all of that stuff. So if I'm an American and I move to India, I'd be disadvantaged because I now have to figure out everything all over again. So in that way, was he disadvantaged? Sure. In the terms of racism, no. That makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, he's a multimillionaire who owns, well, used to own, he's helped start a company called Roivant, as well as a investment fund in Ohio. Quite interesting, by the way. Also, by the way, if you haven't heard Vivek Ramaswamy give a speech, I highly suggest it. Just listen to a 5-minute clip of one of his speeches. Doesn't have to be a political speech, like a business speech or anything. He is an incredible speaker. Like, that's something I want to be. Like, I think I'm decent at speeches, but his level, I have to work my way up to his level. It's like, he's good at it. It's really good. I want to listen to his speeches, not because I necessarily agree with everything he says, but because it's just mesmerizing. That's the word I'm looking for. It's just mesmerizing listening to his speeches. It's great. I like it. Okay, so they're mad that Vivek Ramaswamy doesn't like affirmative action, even though he technically benefited from it, which they're not wrong. He did technically benefit from affirmative action. Affirmative action will benefit you simply because of your skin color, not because of whether or not you suffered racism in the past. And that's an issue. I don't like affirmative action. I'm glad it was overturned. Good. So yes, he benefited from affirmative action. That doesn't mean that he should like affirmative action. For example, I know plenty of people who are mega rich and have benefited from capitalism, but hate capitalism. I don't personally know them. I mean, I know of those people. Not personally, but yeah. For example, Bill Gates, Joe Biden, yeah, essentially any single socialist politician, Bernie Sanders, any mega rich billionaire, excluding Trump or. What's his name? Mark Cuban. Those people, most billionaires tend to hate America, but they benefited from the capitalist society of America. Are they supposed to love America now? No, they have the right to hate America. I think they're wrong to hate America, but they have the right to. It's totally fine. I don't think they're wrong to hate America because they benefited from it. I think they're wrong to hate America because America is the most successful society throughout the entire world simply because of what we are capable of. If you want to become rich here, go ahead. Yes, it's not easy. Yes, you have to work hard, but it is possible, and that's the point. It's possible. That's what makes America so great. Okay, now they have a section that says meritocracy? Question mark. No one gets a Soros scholarship merely by virtue of being from an immigrant family. The prestigious fund values academic rigor in a eligible applicants who must be either green card holders, naturalized citizens, deferred action for childhood arrival, or DACA recipients, grad students born elsewhere who graduated from both U.S. high school and college, or first generation kids of immigration parents are highly qualified students who deserve access to opportunities. Yes, freedom of opportunity is amazing. Equal opportunity is amazing. Equal outcome is terrible. Equal outcome is impossible. You cannot have both. If you have equal opportunity, you will not have equal outcome because everyone is different. It's kind of common sense, but yeah. Equity is equal outcome. Equity is not possible. I mean, not morally possible. You cannot have equity without destroying other people's lives in order to elevate someone else's life. It's not physically possible without doing that. I believe in equal opportunity, which means if you want to go to college, you should be able to go to college. You want to get your master's in business, you should be able to get your master's in business. You want to work hard and become rich? You can work hard and become rich, but you're not going to automatically become rich. You have to work for it. Everything here, you have to work for. You get what you want. what you want is defined by your willpower. If you want something bad enough, you will work for it and you will achieve it. That's what I like about America. If you want to be middle class, you will work for it and you will achieve middle class. You want to be mega rich, you will work and you will achieve it. It's quite interesting. Essentially, it's just a bunch of stuff. Anyways, my point being, it doesn't matter if something like that goes through a committee, passes a subcommittee to go into committee, it's useless. It doesn't matter if there's tiny little laws throughout the world or throughout the country, they're never going to pass if they're stupid. I want to talk really quickly about Israel. I'm a huge fan of Israel. I really am, okay? And what I've found lately, it's kind of disturbing. It really is. So right now in Israel, what they're doing is the Supreme Court in Israel is saying, well, it can do a few things. Right now, what it can do is if there's a law that passes the Israeli legislature, which is mostly conservative right now, the Supreme Court can simply say, no, we think that law is unreasonable, so we're going to overturn it. They don't have a constitution in Israel. The Supreme Court can simply overturn a law because they don't like the law. That's not okay. So the legislator decided to pass a law that says, from now on, you can no longer overturn laws because you think it's unreasonable. There has to be some sort of basis for it, right? And there's extreme protests all over Israel. Like, it's terrible. The country is shutting down in Israel because people don't like that the government is saying the Supreme Court shouldn't have that much power. And they're calling it undemocratic or authoritarian. The Supreme Court isn't voted on. It's not undemocratic. We're saying, what they're saying there is the Supreme Court, a huge selection, I think it's like 9 people in Israel. I'm going to say it's 9 people. I could be wrong. 9 people in Israel who are not elected, they choose themselves, they choose their predecessors, can simply say they don't like a law and therefore it should not be a law. That's authoritarian. Limiting that power is democratic. That's a good thing, to limit their power. I very much dislike it when people... Yeah, anyways. People are arguing about it because no one on the left side of the equation likes this person named Netanyahu, who is the Prime Minister of Israel right now, who's extremely conservative. But yeah, you know, life. Oh well, it's life. Anyways, that's essentially it for the day. I don't have much, but it's something. So I thought I'd talk about that stuff, especially as it becomes more and more prevalent or necessary to talk about in our society. But yeah, that'll be it for the day. Catch y'all later. Adios. God bless.